This podcast is brought to you by Amusement Warehouse Magazine, the industry's largest trade publication. We cover amusement parks, carnivals, fairs, festivals, history, safety columns. We really got it all when it comes to the amusement business. Only remaining print publication in the amusement industry on a regular basis. So if you're interested in what the amusement industry has to offer, subscribe today. You can subscribe by logging on to amusementwarehouse.com, carnivalwarehouse.com, or amusementparkwarehouse.com. Welcome to another edition of the Amusement Warehouse podcast. Today, direct, I think, from Arizona, one beautiful looking horseshoe lake behind you is Danny Brown of Brown's Amusements. Danny, thank you so much for coming on. We really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here.
You know, I'm curious, Brown's Amusements, that came directly. Did you start the company or did your dad do it or how did you get started in the amusement?
No, actually, well, you know, when I was a kid, my folks on this, I'm actually was raised in the Denver area, North Denver, and they had a small show around there for a while, and then my wife and I, when we got together, we got in the game business, and we kind of moved around. We mainly ended up out in California, and we started out as Brown's Concessions, which is over 40 years ago. And now we just finished our 28 years with Brown's Amusements. Won't be long here. We open early in the year. We open about the second week of February. So we're getting ready to start our 29th year.
Wow. So you started out as concessionaires in California. Were your parents in the business?
Yeah, our parents were in the business. My wife's parents both... at one time, her family had a show.
Oh, wow.
They kind of both stepped down. Same thing with my parents. And being raised in the Denver area, we played with some shows up there. Rice Amusements was a show still based out of, I think, Elbert, Colorado, which is down there by Colorado Springs. John Ring and his
John
family.
Ring, yeah.
Yeah, John.
They go to Texas some too, I think, right?
Yeah. They spend a lot of time in Texas. They absolutely do. And they got a beautiful carnival. John does a great job. And then when Ray Kamek moved from the Dakotas, he moved just north of Denver out there. I can't even tell you what year it was. Well, I was young. I was about 15, maybe 14. My dad did a lot of welding and building for him. And
oh, really?
Yeah, I got real close to Ray Kamek himself. He used to come by and pick me up, and we'd go and play racquetball. That was his favorite thing. He loved to go, and we'd go to a place there and play racquetball. He was very good at it. He'd give you a great education. He was an awesome guy, Ray Kamek. Just I can't say enough good words about him.
I actually just interviewed Guy Levitt a couple weeks ago. But you know, it's funny, this racquetball thing keeps coming up all the time. Gary Otterbacher was the first one to tell me about it, and later Frank Zajcik. But there used to be like a little league of show owners that played racquetball with each other. Bernard Thomas at all the conventions, they used to go bring Bernard their Thomas, paddles, their rackets, and they'd play each other.
The craziest thing, they go in there and bid on a spot against each other, and at the end of the day or whatever happened, it never interfered with their friendship. They played racquetball. They did all, they still were, were competitors. And, that's what I remember.
It's one of those things. There's a lot of things you wish you could have seen or been a part of or been around. And I'll tell you, one of the ones would be on my list is to watch one of these show on a racketball tournaments. Must have been, they're so competitive as it is too.
They're very competitive. I mean, Ray Kamek himself, we get in there sometimes two of us. And, when he was on, two of us couldn't beat him.
Wow.
It was great. Yeah.
They said he was a big guy too, right? Ray Kamek, he was pretty.
Yeah, right. Ray was pretty big. Yeah, he was a big guy. And I just got to tell you, I have a lot of fond memories of Ray Kamik. You know, all them guys that come through there, Bernard Thomas and you know, Pat Wright from Rice and Musmouth was an awesome guy. They all had their own little individual things about them, but, you know, they were great teachers. That's what I liked about them. You know, I was raised in the business, so I got to see a lot of different kinds of folks. When we got out to the West Coast there, we played our first season with Foley and Burke shows.
Wow.
We played the last season they were in business, actually. Yeah. Giant operation. And from there, my wife and I, we're in the game business. We went over to B&B Amusements with Buddy and Bobby out there. And we spent quite a few years with them guys. And, you know, and then things were starting to happen. The Del Mar Fair went independent. You know, B&B picked up Costa Mesa. There was a lot of things happening. And if you were a concession guy, it was pretty good for you.
Yeah,
we got to meet, you know, over the years, we got to meet Butch Butler.
Another great Butler
Amusement. Same thing. There's just not enough kind words you can say about him. Very, very nice. And, you know, I'll tell you what, I'm thoroughly impressed. You mentioned Guy Levitt. Guy Levitt has done a phenomenal, him and Charlene and the whole family just have done a phenomenal, you know, job with that company they have. When I see it, I'm just totally amazed by it. It just really is something to see.
The first time I saw them was in the early 90s out in Houston. And I was just out of college a few years and I worked a little bit for Amusements of America, but I had it was a IFE marketing conference. And I went out there and I didn't grow up in the carnival business, so I didn't know a whole lot, but I had ideas about things. And, you know, that we were always debating, we should do this. And they said, oh, you can't do that. It's too hard or whatever. I went out to Houston. I was like, holy mackerel, they're doing all these unbelievable things. And I was so excited. I must have looked like a weirdo, but I happened to see Guy Levitt come out of the office. And I went up to him and I said, Mr. Levitt, I introduced myself. And I said, I'm so impressed by your show. And he said, thank you very much. And then he went somewhere, he took off, but he's a guy of pretty few words most of the time. I told that story when we talked to the podcast.
Yeah, well, you hit it. You know, I've known Guy for, you know, I guess you would say as long as I can remember, well into the 40s, closer to 50 years. And Guy has never been a guy, you know, Guy Leffitt is pretty quiet.
He really was.
Yeah.
I was so overwhelmed that I was gushing with praise. I just couldn't wait to, you know, share what amazing, you know, his show looked like and how impressed I was. But I never got it up. And I probably looked like a crazy person. I was probably drooling or something because I just was so impressed the first time I saw that show. I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah. I get to go down, living here in the Phoenix. When they play the Arizona State Fair, I usually go down there and wander around and you know, it's just the quality of the equipment they got, just the presentation. I haven't been down to Houston in a few years, but one day I'll get down there and go take a look at it there. But even here at the Phoenix Fair, it's very, very impressive.
Yeah, the staffing, the break rooms, the tops and facade things they have on the top are just, it's incredible. It really is.
Yeah. They've done a great job. They have.
So speaking of men, a few words, I heard through the Carnival grapevine that you spent a little time with Frank Conklin out there. Another guy.
I did. Well, you know, it's funny. Frank and I talk on the phone 2 or 3 times a month normally.
Wow.
You know, I just talked to him a couple of days ago. He was, I think it's in Alabama. He's got some property, goes down there hunting for a while.
Right.
And then he was getting ready to head back home over to, I think it's Eagle, Colorado. And he's got a place over there with his family. They all live around there. I've never been to his new place, but it sounds like more like a ranch style.
I can see that.
But, you know, I do like Frank. Frank is same thing. You know what? If you get him talking, I'm telling you, that's what I say.
That's the key, right?
Yeah, if you can get him talking, he loves that, you know, and he'll tell you all them stories that, you know, they're just awesome. They really are, you know.
played a fair. I used to run up in New York, and Frank was always quiet, like you say. But I mean, just to think about it, and having read the Conklin book now, when he was, you know, sent to America, he wanted to, but moving all those big rides, he was personally moving those rides at the beginning too. He didn't just have a staff and he was pointing. He was the man at the beginning and moving stuff and doing things. And he was always hysterical. I did great, a bunch of people around him. There was a little pond, I guess, at the racetrack we were playing. There were some ducks inside. He used to always ride around his camo and his little four wheeler. I said, none of those ducks better be missing. We're going to get a lot of trouble here.
That sounds like him down there. That sounds exactly like him. And I enjoy talking with him. We have some great conversations about the carnival business and, you know, in the past and the people. And, you know, it's just, there's so many great people in this industry.
There are.
I'm always amazed when I talk to them, just, you know, especially as I get older, how I always say, you know, if you're going to stay in this business, you got to be educated by a lot of different things. I mean, you know, you got to know a little about the electrical business, a little bit about the trucking business, a little about the, I mean, yeah, there's so many things to do and
deal with people.
Yeah. And dealing with these people, and these guys do it all, whether they're, you know, the one day they're, you know, they might have dealt all the fire departments and, you know, the fire department, all the things, or somebody from the city. But, you know, it really is. It's a great business to be around. I feel my wife and I, we've been very fortunate. We've kind of moved up through the ranks over the years. And we have a nice little route that we go up through, leave Arizona, go up to Western Colorado. And then we spend about 3 months in that Utah corridor up and down I-15, up in the Salt Lake area. And we just, for 3 months, we don't hardly go anywhere. I think the longest move we have is about 60 miles. And
that's what you told me. Yeah. During the convention last year in Salt Lake, we were talking and I was really surprised by that. But you said you get like all these little festivals and they're pretty close to each other and you go and play them and people are super nice and
people, no problem. All these, there's cities on both sides of the highway, on both sides of, you know, there's new cities and then there's old cities that have been there for a long time. And, you know, most of them all have, you know, they have their own thing, or we do a few of the county fairs right there, but most of ours are in city parks or in city parking lots and the streets. We get so busy now, we split the show up, you know, we have two units, we do that. And it worked well for us because we're not anyway, not too far apart.
And you don't really have, I always think about people who are like, the one I remember the most was straight shows back in the day. And then you have other shows that are like, you know, your size or whatever, where you're playing county fairs or things. And it seems to me that's like a little better life than Ray Kamik shows, for instance. You know, that play all big spots one after another. It's got to be so much pressure week after week to keep them. You know, you got people bidding on them. You got problems. You're probably like, if you move, you know, lose one, you're like, okay, I'll go get another one. It's not that big a deal.
Well, that's always been my motto. I never want to have my whole, you know, and there are shows, you know, they got one or two spots they rely on for their whole,
right,
you know, their whole year. Well, I've never been that way. I've never wanted to rely on one spot or two spots, it's going to affect me for the whole year. I like to kind of stay in the middle. You know, there was a gentleman on the West Coast named Buzzy Christensen, and I got to know Buzzy real well. He had a show out there, Christian Amusements, and Buzzy would all, I'd seen Buzzy in Las Vegas when we used to go, and Buzzy used to tell me, that's when we started the show, he said, Danny, I want you to stay in the middle of the ladder. He said, I want you to stay, you know, right in the middle. He said, don't get too big, don't get too small. He said, if you want to be real successful, you say, get one rung below the middle. He said, that's where the sweet spot is.
And I think you're right. You know, there's a lot of truth to that.
Well, I always remembered it. And I think that's where I'm at. You know, there's been some spots that's come our way, that much bigger spots than what we have now. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think we're just much more comfortable playing that stuff that's a little bit smaller, a little bit somewhere in the middle. And we can do a good job doing that.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I mean, in on the East Coast, we talk about sort of going south, you know, for the fair route, September, October, right. There's a lot of shows, yeah. Say New York or whatever. And you know, at some point, or even in the Midwest, at some point they make a decision and they go south, they go to North Carolina. And there was a time when the competition for those events, it was insane. I had one carnival owner, it's been a long time, but, you know, he's talking to me about, oh, could we get some spots in the South? I said, you know, you're just wasting your time because you need twice as many rides. The spots are probably half as big as you used to play in. And it's just not a lot there. It doesn't make sense, you know, but there was this allure to do it for some reason. And they were all, you know, competing against them. It was almost insane because you had some of these county fairs were getting these bids to have, you know, 12 spectacular rides. They was minimum and it wasn't that good an event, but people were competing for it. And it was just, it seemed crazy to me, but it seems like things after COVID have calmed down a little. I've seen a lot of show owners kind of take a step back and be a little more, you know, give a little more consideration for making moves than they used to, where they used to just fly after a spot and take it if it was big enough. Now they'll really give it some thought, I think.
Well, you're right. COVID's taught us a lot, you know, the year of COVID. I mean, we had to rethink about what we were doing. And, you know, you always think, well, I'll be in good shape. Well, COVID kind of proved to, I would say, a lot of people that we were, you know, the industry wasn't in very good shape. And, you know, we were lucky enough. We got out. We were in our yard a little over a year. We got out and I had to go north of the Phoenix area. And we got to play some events there. Not the Phoenix area, Maricopa County, which is around here. You couldn't get a permit. But once you got out, Prescott, Kingman, Flagstaff, all them, Cottonwood, Arizona, all of them, they were allowing you to have, you can get a permit. And then same thing up in the Colorado area. We were starting to work up there, but it really did. It taught us a lot, boy. You know, just be a little more efficient with your money and, you know, so.
Yeah. That makes watch a lot of sense. You, it was.
Watch where you go.
But it also, you know, earlier you were talking about the people in this industry and how, you know, really special they are in a lot of ways. But COVID, you know, these show owners, I mean, I said, so you do know, you know, did different things or what they did to make a living or, you know, even ride manufacturers were taking in different jobs and doing different things or building stuff in their shop to help. It was amazing. The entrepreneurial spirit, I guess, about people in this industry. Well,
you're right. You're right. I mean, there was, you know, for us, you know, we were pretty lucky. We got to maintain our shop. And we kind of worked our shop all the way through there until we got back out. And we'd had opportunity to go out and do a few other things. But anyway, our shop was open. We got to repair a lot of equipment we haven't done. And when we got back on the road, the show looked really good. Probably the best it's ever looked. But as of now, we kind of closed our shop around Christmas. And we opened it up about the 15th of January, we'll start again with it. And, but yeah, so it seems to me there's quite a bit of difference between the West Coast, the Midwest, especially the East, just the way operations are, and especially the way, and I don't know, the way they trade money. You know, I've never been one to, I can't afford to give all the money away because then we can't afford to buy the trucks we need or the generators or, you know what I mean? But I hear these numbers that these big fairs and these guys give away. And I'm thinking, how do these guys survive? You know, I don't know.
There are certain, you know, I learned, and it's probably a lesson nobody wants to hear, but at the IFE meeting, or it was like a zone meeting in New Jersey one time, there was this little, it wasn't a little, it was a pretty decent, and this is going back quite a ways, but there was this county fair in New Jersey that they did like a presentation. They were getting 55% of the money, 55% of the money at a county fair. Now it wasn't like, you know, it was probably a couple hundred thousand dollars or something or 250, which at that time was a really good size county fair and, you know, whatever, it was great. But, you know, a lot of carnival owners went to this, and one in particular, he's now deceased. He turned to me afterwards. He goes, "This is crazy. I can't believe this guy's giving up, 55% to do the thing." But I thought about it a little bit. I say, "Well, you know, the carnival owner, he doesn't have a spot that's half of that, not one, you know? So he's giving up 55%. His popcorn probably has the biggest week it has, you know, this whole year. His concessions do really well, and you're not bidding on it. So maybe it's not the dumbest thing in the whole world, you know, doing that, because, if it was a reasonable contract, the other guys would be all over it, you know? So
yeah,
he probably counted his money at the end and said, "Oh, you know, I'm satisfied with what I got, so I'm willing to do it." But you're right. In general, the bidding and the going after those things or paying giant percentages it's crazy, you know, to a certain extent.
I don't know how, you know, I don't know how some shows do it. I know they do it. I know they even do it on the West Coast with some of them guys. And I hear the numbers are given away. And, I just say, listen, however you want to operate your show, and if that's okay with you, you know, that's your deal. I mean, it's not me to say a word, but I prefer to be in the middle of the road, little spot, not give all the money away. And we're lucky. We own the food and all the games on the Midway. So owning and everything out there makes a huge difference in the way we operate. We can control everything. We can control the food, you know, the quality of the food, and definitely can control the quality of the game operation. We just finished our 20th year with foreign labor. 20 years ago, we had to make a change because we had no labor, and it was only getting worse. So we started with a dozen 20 years ago, and I still have four of the original 20, and now I think we're up around 100 foreign labor plus different other people. I call them the Americans, you know, and them guys have been with me a long time. My longest employee, this will be, you get ready to start, this will be his 39th year with me.
Jeez.
Our 21st year going here with the foreign labor, and plenty of them guys have been with us 10, 15, 18 years. So having the guys return year after year after year has sure made our life different, whether they're on the rides or the foods. We have two guys, one that, you know, I mean, the guys all run the food. Same thing with the games. I have a couple guys been with me a long time. They help me. One guy helps me move them, and the other guy helps me make sure all the merchandise there and the right stuff is where it goes. And it's worked out pretty well. And, you know, using the foreign labor, they do pretty well. So I think it was about 18 or 19, we started using Magic Money full time. When Magic Money started, actually, with our show, we had a little spot west of the Phoenix area, Wickenburg. Brittany's son would come out and we'd put it in our ticket boxes, and we'd say, "Well, you got to change this. We need to change that." But they sure did. Well, they built a pretty quality device there. And, you know, definitely since we've come out in 21, we've been on Magic Money, and that goes through all the games, the food, and the rides. So it all you got to do is scan now. It's a great deal for us.
Makes it easier. But even prior to that, you were doing tokens, which I find really interesting. I was at you and I guess Pat Crabtree were both the token system, which was fascinating.
I kind of followed Pat's lead. You know, I was having trouble. I was, you know, we spent a little more time up in Colorado before we moved over that way. And, you know, they got really good at counterfeiting tickets. You know, the kids did, the guys did. I knew I was going to make a change. And we were playing a 4th of July spot up there in Colorado. And boy, them tickets were floating around. So I just, before I even had token machines or all the other things, I just start selling tokens out of the ticket box, no more tickets. And we bought a scale, and we were just weighing the tokens. Every ride had its own box. Every game had its own. And it really wasn't a bad deal. I mean, you could weigh them tokens. I think easier than you could weigh tickets personally. And they all went in a big old bowl, and we always sent them out to Bank of 1,000. And later on, we moved over to the machines, and that sure was nice, but it was still not quite what we needed. And then started using Magic Money.
That's quite the progression. Yeah. I mean, but you were one, you and Pat Crabtree were the only, really the only guys in the country using tokens. It was, it's pretty interesting.
Well, you know, what it done for, you know, for me, myself, it just took all the money off the Midway, took all the cash off the Midway.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it was a little work. Tokens wasn't as easy as you want them to be, but you know, it was sure better than, whether, you know, I mean, them guys counterfeiting them tickets, you know, it really was a good transition for us. And we were
I did an event a long time ago in Columbus, Georgia, Riverfest, and they used tokens for all their stuff. And they wanted to introduce a carnival, but they said the carnival had to use tokens. And I was like brand new. It's probably, you know, 21 or 22. And I went to the meeting. And the lady's like, could you do tokens for the rides, games, and food stands? I said, well, as long as the percentages are fair in each one, I don't see why not. And then there were a couple other carnivals that, you know, they were dead set against it because they didn't want to see, you know, people see what the game grosses were and all that sort of thing. And I said, you know, the percentages are going to be different for the rides and they're going to be different for the games. They're going to be different for the food. And she agreed to everything, seemed reasonable. And then, John Favona, who, you know, he was only around probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 years when I was there. He was older, but he called me into his office or called me up or something and told me one of the other carnival owners had called him and told him I ruined the carnival business because I agreed to do tokens at the thing. But I said, I didn't think I did anything wrong. I said, I didn't, as long as they do the right percentage, what's the difference, you know?
Right.
But
right.
Well, that was very controversial. Right.
I just think you got to keep an open mind of, you know, the way things are happening, you know, in today's world, you know, everybody has a debit card, everybody has a credit card, you know,
everybody,
they know everybody, you know, and they all got them on their phone, you know, so, you know, I say, if you're not using some sort of a digital money card, you know, whatever system you want to use, I just don't think myself, you're kind of getting, you're getting all the money. I think there's a lot more money, you know, when you start using it, people spend more money. And that's what I believe.
I think you're right. Because it's not the same as dollar bills going out of your pocket. It's
no.
Just something you're swiping.
Yeah. When you go, whether you buy a $20 card or you buy a $50 or $100, you know, once you buy that card, I always say transferred. It's all you're doing now is just tapping. You know, you're just getting scanned. And it's not like you're pulling out a $5 or a $20 and you can see your money disappearing. I'm all in for it. Whatever system you want to use, you know. It's
that's a great lesson to learn because the money does go much quicker. Like I know my kids, my daughters, you know, I still have carry around some cash and stuff. But when I pay for something in cash, they look at me like I got 8 heads. Like I'm a drug dealer or something coming around, you know, doing the thing. It's the craziest thing to them. And what, I mean, I was like, how did the world change so quickly? It wasn't that long ago. It's like,
well, I would say we're the same because, you know, I'm still from the old school and, you know, and I have a debit card, credit card. I don't like to use them. I use them, but you know, my prefer is just, you know, if I'm going to go buy something, I go buy it, pay for it. You know, I just pay for it in cash. And it's funny. If you go to these counters at these stores now and you say, oh, you know, it's $100 and you pull out $100. They don't even know. Most of them, oh my God, I don't even know what to do. I haven't seen this and they got to reconfigure it, you know.
Yeah, the first thing they do, like a restaurant, is they give you the machine. I want to pay cash. And they're like, oh, well, it must be so rare now. You just tell by the reaction from the people how rare it is. But I, you know, it was pretty normal just a few years ago.
it is. I think we still need it. What we do, and I don't think we need to lose the cash out of our society, but you know, the generation that's behind, you know, that's behind me or you, and especially this generation, it's really, and you know, I always get a, you know, a tickle out of or get a laugh out of, you know, if there's a fee on top of it, they don't even care what the fee is. Young kids don't even care. You know, they'll buy $5, you know, and you know, if the fee is $2 around the show, They don't care. They just, you know, they'll reload that card 5 times. But, the fees, I understand why these banks across the country make so much money now. You know, we're not trying to make money off it. We're just trying to cover the fees of what we're doing. That's all. Well,
the concert people started doing it the first. They whoever had that first meeting, I would have liked to have been there where they said, you know, we'll charge a facility fee. We'll get $5 and whatever. And like people, I would have been, because I'm conservative with that stuff. I would have been like, that's crazy. People are not going to pay that. But sure enough, they pay it. And they you know, it's like you expect you buy, even if you buy a cheap, like $30 concert ticket, it winds up being $40 or $45 after the fees are there. But people don't say much. It's really insane.
We saw that we went to Vegas. We saw them a year ago here in town, but then we saw them in Vegas at the Sphere over there. We saw the Eagles over there.
I saw them last year too. Amazing.
Yeah, just totally amazing. But you know, when time you buy the ticket, I don't even know how tall them fees add up to, but it's a lot, you know.
Just the tickets at that Sphere are really big. We looked too and maybe going. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, I don't remember. I think the ticket was about $300, but I think the time we got done, it was over $400 with all the fees and, you know, oh my gosh, you know. But you want to go see them, that's what you pay.
And they're sold out. I'm like, where are these people coming from, man? All this money to go to a $400 concert.
Yeah, that's a cheap ticket too. You know, I see them an average ticket, $600-$700, you know, for good seats. But you know, I'm still a, you know, the Eagles are probably one of my, you know, my band, I would say, you know, that's what I was raised on. And when I get an opportunity to go see them, I actually had seen them quite a few times before Glenn Frey passed away.
Yeah.
And it's still a great show. I mean, you know, it's still, you know, Vince Gill sings and Glenn Frey's son there. So it's still an awesome show. But yeah.
You know, it's funny. I was never a big Eagles fan and really didn't have a lot of desire to see him. But I happened to be in New York around this time, actually. And they were playing. And I got two of my friends that I'm still friendly with from high school. I said, you know what? Let's go see him. So I went and I was not disappointed. It was really fantastic.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And you know, as you sit there, here's what always amazed me. You forget about all the songs they have had, different singing and everything. They've had, you know, I mean, they never song after song after song, and they're awesome. You know?
Yeah. No question about it. Really good. Yeah. Ride wise, you've done quite a few winter quarters projects lately, right? Yeah, the Wave Swinger you already did, and some others.
We did that. We just went through. We're almost done. We got three kid rides that we've re-racked. We are taking them to where we can, we're mounting them on a 53 foot drop deck. So we're going to be able to.
Oh, three on one. I like that. Yeah, that's a great move.
Yeah. Yeah. So that.
Unless you don't want all three, then it's a pain in the neck. But.
Yeah. And what I'm using these for, they're a little smaller, but they go on my second unit. So they're a perfect fit over there.
Perfect.
And yeah. We carry a forklift over there anyway to get the ticket boxes off. So it's really it's something that I've been wanting to do for a few years. And other than just swing it back, we got to add a few more lights to it and not much. And they're ready to go. And then, you know, when the shop opens, it's like everything. I don't know. I think it's the same ride like my Sizzler. My Sizzler really needs to go through because that's a ride we use week after week. Same thing with it. I have an old Roundup that I use, you know, it never stops being used. And so we do have stuff in the spring and whether truck repairs, we try to do most of our truck repairs in-house. We change all of our own tires. I started doing that years ago. We buy our tires wholesale. We have actually two tire trucks on the show. And so we That's change all of our. Yeah. Yeah. It saves us a lot of time and it saves us a lot of money on the road by having our own equipment out there. And I have a 53 foot Kentucky, big furniture van, you call them, or, anyway, I got a floor up there and we got it racked out and we load the top with different size tires, you know, 22, all the tires on the show. And so if we need a tire, more likely we have it with us. We don't have to go looking for tires. And if, we're making a jump, we always leave that tire, that the trailer towards the end, and we leave one of them tire trucks back there. I have one of them. They pull a kid ride. So we leave one can kind of go out in the middle of one of them tire trucks, and then one goes towards the end with all the rest of the tires. So we don't have to sit on the road 3 or 4 hours. We got that stuff with us. And it really is, you know, anymore, if you go to a truck stop, they're getting $50 or $60 each way, you know, $50 to take it off, $50 to put it back on. And, so, you know, it's, by doing it all of our own self, it's your, and for me, it's just the time sitting there
waiting. And money to dispose of it too.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And we've learned.
What about the Wave Swinger project? How long did that take? And what did you do with that? Where'd you get it from?
Well, we're, you know, we're our final stages with it. And I have to tell you, it looks awesome. It's one of the best. I mean, really, it's going to be one of the best pieces that I've ever rebuilt. And the scenery looks as good as new or brand new. I sent it back into Missouri last year to have all the scenery done. Went all the way through the trailer. We took the old axles off and put all new running gear on it. And I'm changing it over to super singles, kind of modernize it, all air ride. We bought that ride from Amusements of America.
Oh, yeah.
Couple of years
ago. I've ridden that ride many, many times.
Yeah. Well, it's going to look a little different than it used to.
Yeah. Did you replace like these on the pedestal? They had, it was all wood. Is it still wood around the pedestal for the center?
No, you know, we've kind of kept it original. But some stuff we've modernized it. It's just the stuff we need to change. You know, the trader was. It had some troubles. The trailer was wore out, I have to tell you. But I have a good friend who's a great welder and turned him loose with a couple guys, and it sure turned out good. The trailer, and we built all new possum bellies for it, you know, redid the back end. That trailer, and we don't know why, but that was, and this is what I've been told. When we bought that ride, the axles, everybody told me they were on the wrong end of that trailer. They were supposed to be on the opposite end of the trailer. So only thing I can figure out, it maybe at one time that thing, and I don't know why, might have been a park model. Because the axle, really? The axle, we got the drawings. I finally got all the drawings. And the axles go on the other end. So we cut them all off.
I'm pretty sure they bought that from Nova Expositions. Yeah. Out of like West Virginia before they had it. I'm almost positive.
Well,
I'm not sure where he got it.
Yeah. I don't know actually why.
It's a Zier, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a Zier. Uh-huh. Yeah. But the axles were on the opposite end. So we cut all that off, put all new, you know, and put them on the other end. And like I say, all new running gear back there. Yeah. So it really is. When we get it done, I'll have to send you some pictures. We're not too far from being there. I would say I start on that thing and we're knee deep in the Wave Swinger, and all of a sudden, well, we better, before we get run out of time, we better paint these rides. So you run over there and you spend all your energy and we try to get everything cleaned up, all the stuff we can. And then we get back to the Wave Swinger. I did that to a Wisdom Himalaya. I have a Wisdom Himalaya. Same thing. I bought it. It was pretty rough. And it took us a couple of years, but when it turned out, it's been a great piece for us.
The Wave Swinger will be great for you, too. It's just you got to always put it kind of at the point of the midway or the set of the midway. That's what it does. Yeah. And it just does unbelievable.
And I don't know. I don't know. There's probably only 4 or 5 spots a year that I say can justify it on a route, but it'll make a big change. It'll make a big change on the show when we do put it up.
Such a beautiful ride.
It's awesome. The guy that done the scenery on it, he redone all of the gold trim. I mean, the trim is brand new. And then we went back to the original color of the background. I mean, the paintings, him and his wife and the daughter redone all the paintings.
Wow.
And then all the background was painted in that original tan color that it was supposed to be. So, it turned out nice. Very, very nice.
I remember they got the scenery done, you know, at least I remember the time they did it in the 90s, and they had a hard time finding a lady to paint it. They found some lady who was, adept at painting those, but it took a while, and it's it's like real artwork. It's not like, you know, just some,
you hit a red thing.
It's so beautiful.
It is real artwork. And, you know, and I bring friends by and they'll take a look at it and they are amazed. So I'm looking forward to when we do get it done. It'll be this spring sometime. So we're excited about that one. And I don't know, we're always changing up equipment over here. I'm just on the phone here, I don't know, a week or two ago, I ordered a Colmax elephant ride.
Okay.
A couple of years ago, and it was supposed to have been on the boat November, December, and they guaranteed me they'll get it on the boat in January. So if I can get it in January, I should have it by some of my February dates around here. And
that's a good piece, too. That makes some money.
Yeah, and we bought some other stuff. We're trying to refresh the show. You know,
are you waiting on a lot of stuff to come in now with shipping delays and production delays and everything else? What do you got coming up, you know, next couple of years?
Well, I got one of them Colmax spinner rides coming, you know, and I have a big elephant ride from Colmax that's been great. That elephant ride's a great piece. And, you know, and then I last year started buying some of them smaller, I think they call them ADM.
Yeah, Woodkey,
yeah. Yeah, and I got to tell you, I'll be honest with you. I bought one because I was short a ride. We were actually had the show split into three parts, and I was short a ride to order what I was doing, and I bought it, and it filled a gap, and I actually bought another one before the summer was over, and he's building me one now. Our October, we have a busy October for Halloween rentals.
We
keep everything out for Halloween. I think last year I had like 48 rides out there.
Jeez. How many different places?
Well, let's see. Three locations.
Three locations.
And then towards closer, we got to four locations. And so it was, we had a busy October.
Yeah, those AMD rides are perfect for something like that.
Yeah, they are. I'm not... You know, I was really surprised. And so when I went to IAPA there, I ordered one that he's building now. So we'll get it. And I don't know what to see. I would say other than that Colmax spinner ride, probably the only thing I really, and I won't get it for, I don't know, another year and a half, the way I look at it, but we will get it.
Yeah. What are the spectacular rides you have in the show? What are some of your bigger rides?
You know, we don't carry a lot of big rides. I mean, we have a freak out. I have a Watkins Expo wheel, which I love. I mean, I am telling you, I was kind of the first. I was their first customer.
Were you really? When
Childress sold the wheel company, they bought it, and
Childress sold it.
Yeah, I made a handshake deal out there in a parking lot in Gibtown, and I'm on my third one now. This is the third one they
built really? For me.
Yeah.
They build them out like three a year. That's just what they do. They build three wheels two or three wheels, and that's what they do. They're in Maryland, right?
They're in Maryland, south, I think, out of Baltimore there. But I have to tell you, it's a perfect little wheel, and we also have a Eli 16 that we use. I put that on my other unit. And then when we kind of put the show together for the bigger spots, I put both wheels up and they're fine. I don't need to go any bigger, you know, because we have to be able to move this stuff.
Yes.
But, you know, that's our biggest thing. You know, I have a Himalaya and you know, I don't know. We got to be able to get the show down, you know, at four and a half, maybe 5 hours at the most, but most of the time in about 4.5 hours of shows, you know, and that's when we play them bigger. Well, I say when we put up 35 rides, we can still get everything down.
That quickly. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we might get into five because, you know, you get so much wire on the ground. So it just takes a little while to get the wire up. But, you know, everything we have, we try to stay in the middle. I have a tilt that we move. That's
a tough piece.
Yeah, I really like it. I bought it from Kurt Blomberg when he retired from the Butler shows over there. Kurt had built he bought a trailer and racked this tilt on there. And I have to tell you, I think it myself, it's on a 53-foot drop deck trailer. So it's a long thing, but you know what? It doesn't get tore up. That's the nice thing. You know, somebody.
My ride superintendent used to always tell me that was the most unfair ride because you get sort of major ride pay, but it's more like a spectacular as far as your work you have to put into it.
Well, it is, and that really has been our tilt, which I was raised around a tilt. So when I got a chance to buy this one, just because of the rack. You know, it really made it to where we can move it pretty good.
Makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Our guys can get the tilt down. I mean, truly, and I'm not just saying, about 4 hours, you know, three hours, 45 minutes, 4 hours.
That's humping it pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. And the nice thing is it just does not get tore up. Some of these guys, I saw them put them on 28-foot pup trailers. They'll fit on a pup trailer, but, you know, you're going to scratch them all up. That's all I can say. That's what I think.
With Watkins, I meant to ask, is it two seats per car with the Watkins wheel?
No, you can get four people in them.
You can get four people in. Okay.
Yeah, you can get two on each side. Yeah. Yep. And, I'll just say what a nice family, you know,
they are company. Super nice. The kids. Yeah. Everybody.
Yeah. Everybody. What a great company there is to work for.
Are they still running a show or they had a show until pretty recently?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they retired it. And then the last I'd heard, I think he was kind of I'm not sure if he was the son in the middle. He took some rides out last I heard. He had some rides booked with somebody. And the other kid stayed there and built the wheels, you know. But I need to call Roger. They're just such great people.
He'd be a good guy to have on a cup podcast too, now I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely, you know what I like about it? If he tells you something, I promise you, he's telling you the truth. You know,
he seems like that kind of guy. Yeah.
If he tells you it's going to be 3 months, you can just forget about it. It's 3 months. And that's what I've liked about it. You know, it's some of these other manufacturers, and I don't blame them. They get same like us, you know, labor shortage and that, but you're almost at the mercy when they get their stuff done or get it to you. So I've done really well in the years of buying used equipment and just refurbishing it. I mean, that's where we've done a couple zippers like that. Just tore them all the way apart, tore them down to nothing, changed them all up. You know, I got a yo-yo that we've done the same thing. We tore that thing down. It was scary, but we ended up with a product that we really like and, you know, that we can count on.
There you go. The East Coast versus the West Coast, you made me think of before, but at least since I've been in the business, the East Coast has changed a little, but not a lot. But the West Coast is really, you know, the shows, when I first got in the business, the West Coast was you know, you mentioned the Mertens, the Larry Davis.
Larry Davis, he was phenomenal.
Yeah, you had all those guys. I'm missing somebody too that I'm forgetting, but there were all those big shows out there, and they're not Foley and Burke was before my time, but not, you know, they were kind of recent memory when I got in. You had all those big shows, and now the ones left are basically Butler and RCS. And RCS was just, you know, they were kind of new to California when we really were during the time we're talking about.
Yeah.
And you had, you know, Reed Williams with Inland Empire and his shows up there.
Reed's my buddy. You know, Reed
has he said really, he's still right. He's another guy I need to get on and talk to.
Yeah. Reed's my buddy. He is it's funny. As I go through the years, I had a lot of great educators. You know, my father was, my father was, you know, taught me a lot of things as well as Ray Camming did. You know, I used to pester Ray Camming to play racquetball. And I'd always tell Ray when I was a kid, one day I'm going to have my show. Never thinking, but that's just kind of, and he was great to give me information. And Butch Butler was the same way. Butch was just an awesome guy about that. In this area over here, there was, Harley Levitt, Guy Levitt's father. You know, he had a very nice show.
Yeah, I didn't know Guy's parents had a show. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, they had a show. And it was
Frazier
nice.
Shows before they bought them out.
Cecil Frazier. And when we
Lloyd Hillglass.
Lloyd Hillglass. There was a lot of good guys. You know, I mean, you can just, the list goes on. You know, now out there in California, you can't count out Davy Helm, you know. He built a beautiful show. Yeah.
He's got a lot of different things he does, little amusement parks and little different things.
Yeah. That guy's on the go. I don't know when he sleeps. I always tell him, man, you got to lay down and take a nap for a little bit, because he goes in 40 different directions, but he seems to manage it. Yeah.
He talks that fast, too. I'm from New York, and I can barely follow him.
You know, and you go, for me, I go back towards the Midwest or the East, and, you know, I'm really impressed with Corky and Debbie Powers.
Yes.
We've got to know them over the years, and what a beautiful carnival. And Frankie Zajcik, Frank Zajcik, I got to sit with him a few times and just talk. And it's amazing what you can learn, you know, especially being around the business. Frank Conklin come from the game end of it, you know, he come from the games and all that. So it's a joy to talk to him about all that stuff.
Frank Zajcik, you mean, right? You said Conklin.
Frank Zajcik. I apologize. I was just thinking of Frank Conklin. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he, I asked him about that. And I know Frank real well, but, you know, was it scary for him to go from the games to the, there's quite a few, there was somebody else I was interviewing the other day to go from the games to the rides. And he said, I wasn't scared really. I was just said it might've been ignorance, but I was, you know, just forged ahead and did it.
Well, that's like us. We started our show. I mean, we had games, and by then we got into food business. But we come out of California trying to figure out what we're going to do next. You know, we rode a big wave out there, and we wanted to do something else. And you know, we were trying to figure it out. And I made the mistake. I went out to Wisdom with Jerry Wisdom out there, and I bought 4 kid rides. And I figured, well, that'll just get it out of my system till we can figure out what we're going to do with life. And, you know, and then I bought another.
That's what all ride. The drug addicts say.
Yeah. And then I bought another ride. And, you know, and I think, you know, I somewhere in the middle of that, I bought a Watkins. I mean, I bought it was a Watkins Swinger, just a Swinger, you know, that was kind of one of my first big rides. And then I bought a Scrambler from Jerry Wisdom. And we didn't have much for rides. I think I had we finally decided to make a carnival out of it. I think we had 3 adult rides and, you know, 6 or 7 kid rides. And that's what we started with.
And the concessions. Yeah.
Yeah. And the games and, you know, we had a food wagon and we were playing around Denver. And then we finished our first year and, you know, we made it through there. And there was a show down here in the Arizona area, City of Fun, Lou Melendez. And Lou called me in December and said, hey, what are you doing in February? I said, well, nothing. He said, once you bring that equipment down here, you can help me play some of these spots I got, and I'll head you in the right direction. And that's how I got down here to Arizona, just by a phone call. And it went on from there.
It's amazing. You're moving to different states and the different places you're going. Well, do you do a lot with amenities for the show, like the beautification of the show? Is that Frank? You mentioned Frank Zajcik. He was telling me the other day about Lloyd Hilleglass, that the first time he ever saw like shade areas and umbrellas and things like that was on Hilleglass's show. That was really the first time he saw that sort of thing. And that really, you know, changed his perspective on stuff.
Well, they were, you know, I somehow or another, my wife and we'd go out there and Whoop Peterson was my wife's cousin at the time. He did all the electrical work for Larry Davis. He wired the show and all that. So we got to go out and see that show and it's, you know, in its heyday. And it was just as big and grand as you can be. It had all them European rides and same thing with Foley and Burke. That was a gorgeous show, you know. And it's funny, it was just mentioned Conklin's years ago when I was young, we ended up going up there with Ray Kamik and we played, I think he called it the B route or something up there.
Yeah. The B circuit. You know, yeah.
B circuit up there. And I got to see Conklin shows at Regina. And I was just, that's really the first big show I'd ever seen complete. And it was amazing to me.
Oh, that this was when they had the A circuit. So it was sometime.
Oh yeah. 70s or 80s. Grand. And, you know, when you finally got down into the area where we were, Bill Hames shows used to come through there, and that show was gorgeous. Yeah, there were some awesome shows there.
And the things they were doing, that's, you know, for Frank, and with as much as he does with beautification and things, he said that Hill Glass was really stuck out to him because it was really the first one doing that sort of thing.
I would imagine they had, you know, Foley and Burke, they had all the big spots out there for years. You know, I mean, went from big spot to big spot to big spot, you know, so they had plenty of time. We put up rest areas, benches, we do what we can do, you know, but we still in our show, we still have to be able to move it, you know, that we still got to be able to.
Sure.
You know, don't spend all night out there.
But do you find people stay longer? Is it, I mean, you don't just do it because it looks good. You also do it because there's a business reason too, to a certain extent, right?
Absolutely. You know, when it gets hot during the summer, you know, we try to get some rest areas up with benches. And, you know, the other thing is trash cans, man. You know, when there's trash cans near, you know, people use them. If there ain't no trash cans there, they don't use them. They just throw that stuff on the ground. So we have plenty of trash cans for everybody. And we keep the midway lit up nice. Yeah.
That's great. So how much family do you have on the show, Danny? Is it?
It's my wife and I, actually, you know, we're the kind of co-owners of the show, but we've had people around us for years and years. We have a daughter, and you know, we kind of pushed her away. Not that we didn't want her to be in this business, but we said, listen, we want you to go to college and then get a couple. She got a couple big degrees. She went to that Walter Cronkite School of Journalism, got a master's, and then she got some other, and then she got hired right out of college by a big PR company. And kind of fell into that job, and she's been there ever since. I just figured, well, there's always another option, but I don't know. Now we have two grandkids. We have a 6-year-old and a 1-year-old, and her husband is, you know, they do a great job with the kids, and we just love having them grandkids around. But we're the only ones on the show.
No, brothers or sisters or cousins or things like that.
No, I had an older brother which passed away, and I have a younger sister still lives in Denver. She still lives in the north side of Denver out there, and she.
But you got some key people around you as far as staff. Been with you a long time.
Yeah, been with us a long time, and I just feel we're very, very fortunate to have them guys. Cause, you know, they have made our life so much better.
Easier.
They really have. So,
you know, and the HQB workers, you're saying about them earlier, they're fiercely loyal to their specific show too. It's really cool to watch. Because even when they go home to Mexico, they kind of socialize with each other. They're part of your show, or this one's part of that show. And it was Eddie Powers. You're talking about Corky Powers. Eddie Powers told me they have like a soccer league down there with each show as their own team. And
I just got pictures up there from them guys down there playing soccer. And, you know, what's funny about them guys, when they first started coming up here, you know, 18 years ago or 20 years ago, you know, they were all pretty young guys and slender and, you know, not too heavy and all black hair. And now you see them, they're all starting to get chubbed up, gray hair, losing their hair, you know, it's just a totally, you know, totally different guys than I used to, but they are awesome. We work at, you know, the other thing we do is work at drivers. You know, we have some Americans, and then we have plenty of foreign labor drivers. And I think last year, and I'm really close on this, we were close to having 30 drivers on our show.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's taken us years. You know, we work within the inside. We don't go out looking for drivers. We try to educate them in the show if somebody's been with us a while. And, you know, we just tell them, listen, get in the truck. We let them back up around the midway. We teach them how to hook up things. And we do that for a few years. And when they go home, they get to Mexico, they get their license down there. And we come back up here, and then, you know, we'll start them off like in a box truck pulling them game trailers. And as time goes, they get better and better. We just move them up. But yeah, we were close to 30 drivers last year.
That's pretty neat. A lot of people go in the other direction. They have almost no drivers. Now you have
some. Oh, yeah. I hear it all the time. And I get called, hey, can you help come move? I said, no. I'm trying to move my equipment. You know,
but, But, what do you think? How do you view the future of the carnival industry? You think it's bright, or you think it's going to be tough, or you think we're okay? My last question for you today.
Yeah. You know, I think our industry is in good shape. What worries me is about, you know, the future of carnival, just because of the generations of kids that have moved on and not decide to follow in their parents' footsteps. You take a show like Ray Kamick shows, which has, you know, family member after family, them guys will stay within it. And there are other shows out there. You know, the Butlers have done a great, I mean, I'm down with the West Coast.
Right Hoffers that way, Amusements of America.
Yeah. But there's the shows in the middle of my size that, like, there's nobody really following me. Now, I do have some key guys that I could probably do something with. But you know, I mean, as far as family, I only had the one daughter, and she likes what she's doing. And I would never ask her to, you know, stop doing that, because she's found a pretty good home over there. So that's what worries me about our industry. It's just the generations coming up. But I think the rest of it, I think if you're willing to maybe learn a little bit, something else, something different, you know, reach out there and learn about, you know, I mean, I'll just say about digital money, or there are shows that I know don't even use foreign labor. And I don't know how they do it. They don't use foreign labor, or if they do, it's just a few guys, which is crazy to me. I know a show, and I won't bring up their name. They don't even take a credit card.
That's
in today's world. Yeah, they don't take a debit card or a credit card, only cash. Now they'll put an ATM out there and feel that's a pretty good trend, you know, then go to the ATM and get the cash. But I think anymore, you know, the amount of money that comes through our ticket boxes by using, you know, a credit card, debit cards, however you want to do it, we take it all. But yeah, you have to learn. I just think you have to change up a little bit.
Well, I appreciate you coming on again. Probably could talk for hours about this. We'll hopefully talk to you very soon and see you soon. I'd like to come out and see the show. Hopefully, now get out there next year.
Well, it'd be great. It'd be awesome. It'd be a pleasure.
Thank you so much for taking the time, Danny. We're doing this before the holidays, so Merry Christmas to you and your family. Right. And yeah. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.